Good afternoon. Welcome into Market Talk for Wednesday, February 10th, 2021. Good afternoon to you. Hopefully you're staying warm where you're at as this cold weather is gripping much of the U.S., and we appreciate you taking time to join us here today. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Great to be here as always. MarketTalkAg.com, that's our home on the web, as well as Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. It is all at MarketTalkAg. We got a lot to talk about today, a pretty rough day in our grain trade. Let's bring in our good friend Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics. Mike, good afternoon to you. And, you know, we were joking a little bit off air. You and I, outside of one or two episodes, we keep finding the negative to talk about with these markets, but a rough day in grains, Mike.
Another weaker Wednesday. We better start keeping track of this, Jesse. We might be part of a fund. Once they watch our market talk, maybe they assume that it's going to go ahead and go lower on the next Wednesday. So man, good to be back with you.
Yeah, good to have you here. And man, I don't know. It's not a joking matter, obviously, but we just scratch our heads and look at all of this here moving into Wednesday with an aggressive down day, aggressive sell day here, with a lot of profit taking in grains, and it all stemmed off that WASDE report Tuesday. I want your initial thoughts on that report. I asked this question yesterday, and I'll ask it to you, especially on the corn side. Did USDA just kick the can down the road here with these numbers they brought out for February?
I felt like they did, but I think also the issue with the soybean carryover, I would not look for USDA to go below 120 on carryover at this stage of the game until we get safely planted in next spring, Jesse. I think that's just part of the way the numbers and the statisticians work in the government. You know, based upon my experience, it's very difficult to go below 110 million bushels on outright number. And, you know, keep in mind, after yesterday's reduction of 20 million bushels, U.S. soybean ending stocks divided by their total usage came in at 2.6% stocks to use ratio. That compares to 3.1% back in January. Corn, very similar. You know, we didn't get the report we wanted as far as the USDA only increased exports by 50 million bushels. But here again, U.S. ending stocks divided by total usage came in at 10.3% stocks to use ratios. That compares to 10.6 in January. So from a standpoint of is the market price high enough to ration demand, if you look at just those two metrics, no, it is not. And so I think my initial thought after the report was it wouldn't surprise me to have a pullback like we had in January, because we didn't really feed the bull. And we really are in February. We're only 60 days away from planting. So I'm not surprised that we would have a pullback or a technical correction. But what we saw on Wednesday, I think there's more to it than that. And that the three things that come to my mind is the trade is just outright buying into the idea that USDA's demand number for corn is accurate, that our demand has peaked. I'm not there yet. I can't see that yet. And in fact, USDA on that same report yesterday increased the Chinese corn imports by 6.5 million tons. Well, you drill that down into the number of bushels and you're talking about 256 million bushels they increased Chinese corn imports. So to take our imports up 50 million and to take the imports, our exports up 50 million bushels, and to take China's imports up 256 million, who else are they going to buy that other 200 million bushels from? So I just can't see it from a variety of reasons that the trade would think that the demand peak is in place and that we've rationed enough demand, especially in the corn. I think what is probably going on, especially since we had a lighter volume today, much lighter volume for the most part than what we had on report day, was we saw some inflation bulls exit this market. And I think it's because the consumer price index came out about 9 o'clock central time or 8:30 central time. It seems as though that seemed to trigger the market quite a bit, and new lows ensued after that. So I think the inflation data helped support the idea of a bigger than expected correction. I will admit that I do not like the fact that USDA came out with a USDA export sale of unknown destinations of corn, and then 20 minutes later, came in and said, oh, we're sorry, that was a cancellation. That to me, and I think to the market, says somebody's washing out of corn, you know, just like the Chinese reportedly did in beans to Brazil a week or so ago. That's a big flag to me. I got to really watch that. And so this leads me into the weekly export sales on Thursday. That's almost like a fourth and long or a third and long type scenario where that's got to come through and show us that demand is not wavered at these higher prices.
And I agree with everything you just said there. I think you summarized that perfectly. You know, and after the report on Tuesday, I was fairly happy with our close. I know beans were higher, and you know, we pulled corn and wheat off the lows. I'm thinking, okay, you know, we might be setting ourselves up for an okay day on Wednesday. And then you mentioned some of those factors, and today just an aggressive sell-off here. I mean, we're talking corn, you know, old crop down 10, 11 cents, new crop, that March contract was down, or old crop was down 21 and three quarters, and new crop was down 10, 11 cents. I mean, beans, you know, 40 to almost 50 some cents lower in contracts here. What do you make of that for producers if they're looking at this here today and getting a little concerned, maybe a little flustered? We always say we got to remember this. I mean, these are good price levels, but
yeah,
you know, kind of looking at these numbers today, what do you make of that, and what do you give as advice?
Look, this is the heart and soul of what you and I have been talking about the sell and defend model. Do you sell it as it goes higher and defend it so that you don't have to catch a falling knife once prices go lower? That helps you ensure your revenue per acre if you're a grain farmer, and your profit per acre and your profit per head and your revenue per head if you're a livestock producer. And so this goes right back to what we talked about last week. I have chosen, because of the experience I've gone through and what I know about myself, that I like to sell as it goes higher because I know my profit per acre at that point. So having said that, and put that off to the side, to get exactly to your point, I am not going to put my ego in front of, in my analysis, in other words, in front of producers' profitability here. And what I mean by that is corn and soy meal both made new monthly February lows a day after a key WASDE report. So not only did the market not do what we wanted it to do, it did the exact opposite in two of the major feed grain industries that have been the real rock solid support in this marketplace. So as we are going into crop insurance base price figuring, days like today really hurt. They don't hurt you from a standpoint of bringing your average down that much, but because it's early in the month, these prices right here really mean a lot to your overall average. In other words, it's going to be really hard to get above 450 now in December corn for a base price. 450, 451 is where we're at right now. And the same with soybeans, 1160, 1165. But above those levels is really going to be tough unless we immediately negate these kind of prices. So that's what these kind of prices do to us in the month of February. And so my point is this, very simply, what I'm going to tell clients and subscribers is, we've taken out the monthly lows in for February in meal and corn. If we don't see wheat come back around and provide some support on winter kill, on a weaker dollar, and on USDA's numbers being very supportive globally, if we don't see that this month and we take out the January lows in these grains, I am not going to stop from getting some more hedges in place. Maybe I'll do more bought puts and less cash sales, but I'm not going to fight the technicals, because if you fight the technicals this time of year, you're really kind of fighting the fundamentals, because the fundamentals are kind of laid out at this point. And to give you an idea, we've talked about the inflation bull. We've talked about the La Nina bull. Well, the Japanese Bureau of Meteorology came out this morning and said there's an 80% likelihood, in their opinion, that La Nina will be over by the spring. So you've got an inflation bull that maybe is vulnerable now because of the CPI, and now you've got a La Nina bull that's maybe vulnerable if the Bureau of Meteorology in Australia comes out with the same conclusion here in the next few days or week. So don't mess with the technicals right now would be my vote. Get the hedges in place if you lose your technical support.
Well, and you mentioned it as well. We'll be looking at Thursday's weekly export sales. That's I like your analogy. It's probably going to be kind of like Patrick Mahomes running around in the Super Bowl.
Don't bring that up. Please don't mention that.
We'll see if we get anything there. But I know that China Lunar New Year's upon us as well. And
right.
You know, moving past that, we got that outlook form coming up from USDA, and I think that's going to be the next milestone in the road as we head towards spring planting. And we've talked about this multiple times, that acreage battle that's shaping up, even, you know, with a hard sell-off here, we still have an impressive acreage battle shaping up, and that's going to help drive, I think, this market for the foreseeable future once we get some of those early numbers in.
Yeah, I really think it will too, and I think this is where, because the front end is leading the new crop lower in both corn and beans right now, and you're breaking the spread back, which is a signal that the market is worried about the front end price more than the back end price. But by taking that new crop lower before we get any kind of baseline projections or any kind of new updates from the Agricultural Outlook Forum, I may be in the hunt for getting some reownership on the books very, very soon, depending on what USDA actually says at the end of this month and how the market reacts to that. And I'm really looking at December corn more than anything, because I think the private trade estimates are really high right now. I think it was Farm Futures that came in with about a 4% increase in corn acres and about a 1.7% increase in bean acres in their survey. I think it was like 900 farmers that they did. So a good sized survey. Having said that, my own survey from a month ago would be the exact opposite. The producers are really gunning after soybeans, especially with diesel prices going higher. I've heard from quite a few more clients this month about, do I lock in diesel or not? Which my answer to them and recommendation for the most part is no. We're going to go ahead and start refining more for the winter and for the diesel. And the price has already moved sharply higher. So I think it's worth the risk, you know, going hand to mouth right now for the next couple, 3 weeks. But between diesel, chemical, fertilizer, seed, and just the sheer price of November beans and what it probably will look like for the crop insurance base price, I think it's probably more like 3 or 4% increases in beans and 1 to 2% increases in corn.
And to your point, you know, I'm hearing from some producers in Iowa, they're talking about, you know, ripping up what they've normally done corn continuous and going beans because of the derecho last year. So
yeah, and I heard from a northern Iowa client just this week, and he said, we're still super dry up here. This is not corn planting weather. Now, having said that, I know them well enough to know that if it's dry when it's time to plant corn, they'll plant corn in the dust, and especially if they have a decent revenue per acre for a base price.
I do know that as well, being a northern Iowa guy myself. Let's switch topics. I think we've hit on enough with grains. It'll be interesting to see where we wrap up this week. But let's move over to this hog market here, Mike. I wish I had a sound of a squealing pig, because this thing has been moving higher. Another good, impressive day today. I know that February contract set to expire, it's holding pretty close to cash, but you look at April, May, beyond that, we're getting some good price levels here in hogs, and we got good pork export numbers on the WASDE report. I think a lot of that's factoring into some good strength in this market. What do you say?
Yes, I agree. And we also have the continued strength in the cutouts, which is very counter-seasonal for this time of year. We usually see a real strong beef seasonal, not a really strong pork season. I'll tell you what I think's going on, Jesse, other than the disease issues that we've hit upon very, very keenly, both here in the United States and across the waters in Asia and in Europe. I think another factor is I've noticed, and this was a Super Bowl article that I was reading in a food periodical that I buy, that chicken wings are, the likelihood of a record volume of chicken wings being sold and buffalo wings being sold for the Super Bowl was going to be there. The likelihood was high, and the prices were very high compared to what they are normally. And that has started to bleed over into the chicken breasts and some of the other cuts for the poultry side of the equation. So I think pork is picking up some extra business just because of the substitution effect of very high poultry prices at the grocery store. And when I went out and looked at my local grocery store after reading that article, I was surprised at how high some of these chicken cuts were. So I think pork is getting essentially like those old 8-cylinder engines that we used to talk about. They're running on all 8s right now. They're firing perfectly on all 8s. Domestic demand, domestic supply, foreign supply is low and foreign demand is very high, especially given the disease pressure. So I'm not thinking that there's a lot more upside in the hog market here, especially as you say, those deferred months breaking through $91 here. That is a really rich price right now. And so I'm kind of where I was last week when I talked about getting some more hog hedges in place before the end of February, especially now that I've seen the WASDE report and I've seen that they're still sticking with a relatively low cash steer price for the second and third quarter. Really didn't change those at all from last month. And, you know, that puts you up anywhere from $6 to $11 higher on futures market for April and June fat cattle versus what USDA says we're going to get for the second and third quarter. So I think cattle will probably play more of a weighty role and a negative role for the hogs when it's all said and done.
Well, and with the hog sector as well, you know, we don't have as many independent hog producers out there these days, but still, you mentioned some of those price levels and getting some hedges in place, and it seems like it would be a really prime opportunity right now for some of those independent producers. And plus, too, we have to factor in this cold spell, not even with just hogs, but with cattle also. That's going to play a factor here, I think, the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and you know, you bring up a good point because you're right. There's not very many farrow to finish guys left to really hedge hogs at the mercantile exchange. But what we can do, and what I do with some of the producers I still work with that are, you know, somewhat independent, most of these contracts that they have a range of a low and a high bar that they can get, but they aren't going to get any more than that. Well, we're up at the top end, and so if we could sell and the market falls and we can tack on to their average price, that ends up putting a lot more potential profit on the books for them versus what they would normally get because they're just pretty much trading in a trading range as far as their cash marketing. So something to consider to anybody that's listening out there. But yeah, going back to the cattle side of the equation, this weather market came in at really the right time because the cash market, as witnessed by the Fed Cattle Exchange just today, really could not get anything done past 114. That was on mediocre volume. Some mm-hmm. of the reserve prices for Fed steers were 115. Those reserves weren't even met. So I think this is one of those markets where I believe the cash market is at the right price because between the pork and chicken volumes that are moving versus what we're seeing, and these weights went up another 2 pounds after what a 4 or 5 pound increase 2 weeks ago. It just says to me these cattle are still backing up and the marketings are backing up, but maybe we'll have some death loss. Maybe there'll be some issues with this cold weather. And that I think is certainly at this point, keeping the longs in the market and the funds are accruing a bigger long position in fat cattle, I think in part because of that.
Yeah. And, you know, we look at that cash trade and you mentioned that with cattle and I know feedlots are pushing for more money here again this week, but I mean, you know, 116, 117 asking price in the South, 185 in the North, and starting to get a few bids out there as of this afternoon. We're not even coming close to that. I mean, 113, 114, 180, on the dress side. So I think we're really going to see a battle here in feedlot country the rest of this week, trying to close that gap a little bit. And I don't know if we can do it, Mike.
Yeah, you know, you bring up a really good point about feedlot country and looking at both the weather models before we went on air here. They're really coming together. They're talking both cold and both very serious, significant snowfall totals in Oklahoma, in the panhandle, in the feedlot country of Kansas, that Hutchinson area. And Garden City area, you know, a dozen inches of snow and 10 below degree temperatures, you're not going to get anything out of there, even if you want it. So we may have a moderate strong market here this week. But if this kind of a weather system sets up next week and it'd be over the weekend and early next week, it may really create some fireworks in the cattle and in the feeder. So my advice to producers right now is, don't have unlimited risk positions in the cattle. Keep your hedges in place, but keep them in the form of bought puts. And then once we get past the weather, go ahead and move those puts up, sell out the old ones and buy new ones at a higher price. Yeah, you'll take a small loss, but you'll increase your average price, your average sale price a lot nicer in most circumstances. But be very careful of a spike high next week if this kind of a weather scenario sets up, because I was stunned that, you know, Guymon, Oklahoma, and Hutchinson and Garden City, they could have 12, 13 inches of snow come Monday afternoon.
Yeah, just impressive weather models moving in there. We'll have to see if it does happen moving as we move into the weekend. Mike, any other final thoughts for us? Anything on the energy side, macro side, or anything else that we need to pay attention to?
Yeah, I just want to reinforce the idea of the funds versus the fundamentals, Jesse. I think that's one of the things that I've been doing this a little over 26 years now, and trying to bring the macro and micro together. What that means is trying to bring the funds and how they think versus the supply to demand fundamentals and how they work, bring those together. And then you have a pretty good sense, I think, of what the value of the price of corn, beans, cattle, hogs, wheat are, and then take advantage of that when you see it, what I call overvalue. And I think this is where it goes back to, we could still very much be in a 2007, 2008 scenario or model year, as I would say, because no year is exactly the same. But that we had some pretty big pullbacks, $4 pullbacks a bushel in soybeans during that time period before we went up and made the ultimate high in the summer of 2008. So just keep your marketing plan in your head and don't wear it on your heart and watching the screen all the time.
Well, Mike, I know you always have great advice for producers, and you have a lot of that online at globalcomresearch.com. That is com with two M's in the middle there. And I know people can go there, sign up for a trial with your newsletter and more, Mike.
I hope they do, because it's completely free and I don't badger people. I'll call them once after the end of the trial, and if they aren't interested, you'll never hear from me. So please do that and check us out.
globalcomresearch.com. That's globalcomresearch, com with two M's.com. You can find Mike Zuzulo there very easily. Mike, appreciate the time as always on this Wednesday, and we'll talk to you next week.
Great questions as always, Jesse. Thanks for having me.
Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics, our guest today here on Market Talk. Find us online, markettalkag.com. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Have a great afternoon.